You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Friday morning, although it's not Good Friday, but on a Friday, good morning. How about that? Yeah. Anyway, Mike McNamara for a Friday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you're doing good. Hope you're staying safe. I had to go to the store yesterday. I was looking for vegetarian pasta. Yeah, because I try to stay away from wheat. And then I saw some. I think the company's name is Borelli. They make pasta. It said vegetarian on the box. I thought it would be made with chickpeas or something. But it said it's 25% vegetarian. What is that? You can't put vegetarian on the front of the box and only be 25%. What kind of bullshit is that? So if anybody from Borelli is listening, come on, man. What's up with that? What's up with that nonsense? I'll tell you, how do I say this gently? A lot of interest in the changes proposed in the Marine Corps. I know that because I had Mark Cancion on. And the shows that when I've had Tim and Jeff on, they have we've got a lot of feedback from that. And yeah, and we know a lot of people, but the feedback has been coming from, you know, everywhere. And there's a tremendous amount of concern across the Marine Corps about what the Commandant has proposed. And so we'll continue to talk about that, but I would be remiss. I believe in the truth and whatnot. And a lot of times, you know, people get afraid of the truth. And, but, you know, the things that you hear on a consistent basis are not broadly supported among general officers in the Marine Corps. And that's a concern. And the other thing you hear I know a lot of people, and I've done this for 4 years, and I know a lot of people inside and outside the Marine Corps. And so it's interesting. The people that have either emailed or picked up the phone, and you know the things that they say. The other concern is that not done in a large group setting. So we'll run that stuff down, and Tim and Jeff and I kind of got canceled yesterday abruptly, and we'll finish that sometime today, and I'll put that up, and I'll ask them, you know, what they've heard, and so we'll compare notes. But I think so. Two things I would tell you: one, there's tremendous concern among active duty Marines and retired Marines about the drastic step. Two, one of the things that Mark Cancion gave me was he gave me something to read. It's called Driving in the Dark, 10 Propositions About Prediction and National Security. And it talks about how poorly the nation has predicted the next conflict. And so to me, that ought to go into your thinking. And it's a pretty interesting paper. There's 10 propositions about prediction and national security. And the first five are grouped under this heading. It says, humanity is compelled to predict and will fail, right? The first five propositions. So he's got five propositions underneath that. Number one, the propensity to make predictions and to act on the basis of predictions is inherently human. Two, requirements for predictions will consistently exceed the ability to predict. Three, the propensity for prediction is especially deeply embedded in the U.S. Department of Defense. Four, the unpredictability of long-term national security challenges will always confound the irresistible force that drives prediction. Number five, planning across a range of scenarios is good practice, but will not prevent predictive failures. Okay, so even planning across a range of scenarios, right, doesn't adequately prepare you for the future. And then the second part is how to prepare for predictive failure, the last five propositions. So number six, accelerate tempo, delay some decisions. Talks about that. Number seven, increase the agility of production processes. Number eight, prioritize equipment that is most adaptable. That makes a lot of sense right there. Number nine, build more for the short term. And 10, nurture diversity, create competition. So anyway, the takeaway from all that is your prediction is probably, you know, if anything should drive your planning, your prediction is not going to be accurate. And so it's interesting when you think about that General Berger, all in, no hedging, right, on one course of action, and the whole Marine Corps will be tilted towards that, right? And done in a small group, and from what I hear, without broad support among general officers. Now, they won't say anything. Okay? They never do. That's why they're such horrible interviews. If you want boilerplate, roll a general on and see what they say. So anyway, that's a great concern across the board. So, I'll get Tim and Jeff on and look for a post either later tonight or tomorrow. As we kind of discuss Mark Cancion's article. And really what I'm trying to build is a framework for analysis relative to General Berger's plan. You know, what's the appropriate framework to take a look at that thing? And again, I'm not interested in a skewed look. I'm interested in evaluating it relative to, you know, what he believes, relative to what others believe. And so, one, you have to define, right? So what's the impetus of all this, right? Is it the National Defense Strategy? Was the Commandant told by the Secretary of Defense to make this happen? Was somebody told by somebody that the Marine Corps is irrelevant and has to reinvent itself? Because, again, historically, right, we're a naval amphibious force designed to participate in naval campaigns. What was the last naval campaign that we participated in? And the answer to that is World War II. Now, you could say, I mean, we've done amphibious operations. At Pusan, we went ashore, and at Incheon, we went ashore, right? Did it at Grenada, came from the sea in Beirut, came from the sea in Somalia, right? So, I mean, we've done that, but not a campaign as is being discussed, okay? So the historical value to the Marine Corps is a force in readiness that comes from the sea, right? And a force that is capable of being heavy enough. If you want us to do heavy tricks, or if you want us to do light tricks, we can shed that equipment and we can go. But having the capability to do that, that has been the historic utility of the Marine Corps. It won't be in the future. It won't be in the future. And so it's interesting reading this thing about predictive failure. And if you layer that on top of, you know, General Berger's course of action, you're like, uh-oh, if he's wrong, the Marine Corps becomes an irrelevant force. And I've heard that that conflict with China, while most deadly, is least likely. So anyway, so the framework for analysis, right? So motivation. What is the impetus of all this? The National Defense Strategy, right? And if you read the unclassified version that's out there, it's about 11 pages. I think it's about 18 pages if you print the foreword and the footnotes, or there is no footnotes, signed by J.N. Mattis, right? So obviously they talk about, depending on who phrases it for you, the 2-2-1. The top two are Russia, China. China being number one by far, then Russia. 3 and 4 down a step are North Korea, Iran, and 5 is non-state actors. So you'll hear it referred to as 4-1, 2-2-1, right? So those are the threats to national security. And so, what's the Marine Corps' role in all that, right? So anyway, so the framework for analyzation. So Marine Corps course of action development relative to that, you know. So where does this come from, right? It certainly isn't General Berger alone sitting at his desk. And, you know, truth be told, we had, you know, an operational construct, right? I'm looking at a document that's entitled Marine Corps Service Campaign Plan, 2014 to 2022. I'm looking at another one called the Marine Corps Concept, Marine Corps Operating Concept, signed by Bob Neller. How an Expeditionary Force Operates in the 21st Century, dated in 2016. Right? And so anyway, we had operating concepts. And so, you know, as soon as General Berger, right after he took command, he said, hey, Marine Corps, what, 2025, you know, that is, you can take that off every website. That is no longer going to happen. And this is the direction where we're going. So, again, who developed this, and does it have broad buy-in? So far, you haven't seen any general officers come out and support it. One of the things that I'll tell you is if you read Michael Gordon's article, you know, the general that you see quoted in it is General Zinni. And General Zinni is, how would I describe it? He has questions about it. COA development. Like, where does that come from? How broad-based is it? Okay. Man, we've talked about adversaries in the framework, okay? External commitments that it will take to make it happen as we build kind of the framework. So, you know, you've seen, you know, General Berger say, or that, you know, if we need to be a part of a heavier fight, the Army is going to supply us tanks. Really? Has anybody seen the Army say, we're good for that? When we get into a big armor conflict, we'll have a spare tank brigade for the Marine Corps. I haven't seen that. It happened in Desert Storm because the division that owned the tank brigade had been deactivated. The tank brigade hadn't been deactivated yet, or deactivated, whichever you prefer. And so the Marine Corps got it after the conflict ended. I think it was called the Tiger Brigade. They came back to the United States. They were deactivated. So the Army hasn't slapped the table on that. In terms of amphibious shipping, the Navy hasn't defined what their amphibious force is going to look like. And if they're as committed to whatever they, you know, project in the future as they have been to what they've owned in the past, that shit is never going to get out of port. Because it's a struggle. It's a struggle. The amphibious Navy is not a priority for the United States Navy. It does not. So has that been defined? Has the Navy slapped a table on that? The answer to that is no. The other part of this scenario in the first island chain is Marines fighting from inside what's called the FEZ. I'm sorry, the WEZ, all right, which is the weapons engagement zone, okay? So in the concept, the Marine Corps is a stand-in force that operates within the weapon engagement zone, not a standoff force that must start outside and fight its way in. So now, do we have any kind of diplomatic, you know, relationship with the nations in the region that allows any of that? Vietnam, no. Philippines, no. Borneo, Brunei, Indonesia, right? Malaysia, right? No. Okay, so that needs to be put on the to-do list if we're going to operate from inside there. Right? What's the role of the Marine Corps Reserve? Since General Berger said, we're not hedging. There's no hedges. Tanks gone. Tube artillery gone. Bridging capability gone. Okay? So to me, that's got to be part of the framework for analysis. Right? Now, when you talk about inside, you know, the weapons, you know, engagement zone, the sustainment piece, you'll hear people say, well, we'll forage. We'll forage. We'll live off the land. Okay. How do you resupply the missiles? Who goes in there? You're inside the weapons engagement area. And so some of this stuff, in my opinion, has been fairy dusted. You're going to have Marine organizations in combat, in remote areas, and you're going to say that they're going to forage. So but sustainment is a piece of it, right, as we go down the road. And then the cost-benefit analysis, the trade-off. You're going to give away all these capabilities and these capabilities that support other missions in the range of military operations, ROMO. You're going to give all those up to be relevant in the weapon exclusion zone in the South China Sea in the fight against China. It sounds like a disproportionate trade to me, okay? But again, I'm just building the framework. So what's the cost-benefit analysis, right? And then what's the cost in terms of capability? Here's a question. When you lose tanks, when you lose tubed artillery, when you shrink your battalions down to 600 people, and the reason everybody knows, the reason that Marine Corps battalions are big is so you can sustain casualties and continue the fight. That's why they're big. So when you lose your weapons platoons, when you lose your weapons companies, you lose your mortars, you lose your machine guns, can you still close with? So again, so in creating this framework for analysis, you know, hopefully, and then having people on like Mark Kansian, like TX Hamas, who you'll hear on Monday, hopefully will contribute to the discussion and be able to shine a light on if the Marine Corps is doing something good or if the Marine Corps, led by General Berger, is doing something not so good. And I think all those things are important pieces of it, right? All those things are important pieces of it. So anyway, good morning to you on a Friday. So we'll do that. And look for the Lynch and Kenny piece of that. We'll probably complete that sometime tonight. And you can look for that over the weekend. And then, General Hamas coming up next week. General Hamas, Colonel T.X. Hamas, United States Marine Corps retired. He's a future warfare guy and always been a big thinker. And again, but the thing I'm going to tell you is, so people like to talk about the future, and in the future you can make assumptions and you can fairy dust stuff away. Well, in the real world, you can't do that. And if you understand predictive failure, right, and how poorly we've been at predicting the future, then to me, right, that has implications for the way you plan. Right. That has implications for the way you plan. So anyway, interesting, in my opinion, interesting stuff. So we'll talk about it. But TX Hamm is going to join us next week. Grant Newsham is going to join us next week. Grant has an interesting little piece right now talking about, is China taking notes about the chaos that this biological event has caused? Are they taking notes? And that the next time a pandemic like this happens, might they, right, send their troops into Hong Kong? And the world so preoccupied, you know, other than strongly worded protestations, world too preoccupied to react. So anyway, so Grant will be on. And then I believe Jack Riley's going to be on. And we'll talk about Kam Tien. And the reason I enjoy or I want to talk about Kam Tien and the battles around there is that that's when, you know, we fought a pier, the last time the United States military fought a pier. And so at Kam Tien, Bravo Company 19 and an operation called Buffalo start into the DMZ in a movement to contact, and they got hammered. And so we'll talk to Jack. Jack was with India Company 39. 39 was called the Sparrowhawk Battalion, and that meant you were the quick reaction force. So Jack heloed up to and his guys they heloed into Kam Tien, and then they moved into the DMZ to support 1st Battalion, 9th Marines. So you'll hear that. And Jack's personal story and his observations and whatnot. So you'll hear that. And then I'm looking for other guys in 19 that'll come on and talk about that experience. And again, you know, things that people don't know. You know, Jack, you know, talked about, you know, the NVA using flamethrowers. And he says, hell, I didn't know they used flamethrowers. Yeah, a lot of people still don't. But what it's like to fight a peer that's going to come and put your head on a stick. So anyway, I think Kam Tien's important, and the battles around Leatherneck Square are important. And if you want to talk about peer-to-peer warfare. So good morning to you on a Friday. Whitney Houston makes Friday official. Yeah, she does all right with that. And this is dedicated to everybody out there who's dealing with somebody who's got the coronavirus in their family. So God bless you. You all are in our thoughts and prayers. And we'll keep our fingers crossed. So hang in there. It'll get, you know, it's easy to say it'll get better when it doesn't impact you. I've learned that. But good luck. We're all pulling for you.
Betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
Once you're out of the core, you know, it's your responsibility to live your life in a way that would honor those that were with you and died. I mean, don't waste your life. Goodness, do something meaningful and don't be going out there saying, look, oh, woe is me. I'm a poor veteran, or I'm a disabled veteran. Well, yeah, I am a disabled veteran. But, you know, we can't have that kind of attitude. We've got to show people that, hey, we care about our country. We care about what happens to everyone. Marine Corps changed me. It made me a better man, but I don't know a Marine that wouldn't tell you the same thing, Mike.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Time to check the weather. Currently, it is warmed up on the East Coast. Sunny and 63 in Quantico. It is partly sunny and 75 at Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune, home of the 2nd Marine Division. Out in 29 Palms, it is sunny and 47, so a little cooler out there. Sunny and 48 at Camp Pendleton. Camp Smith in Hawaii. Dark, raining in 67. Okinawa Shima, the home of Camp Butler. I watched a little bit about the Battle of Okinawa. Yeah, man, that thing was... I don't think Okinawa gets enough publicity as just a very unpleasant place and a very unpleasant fight. But, yeah, there was, what, five times as many? You know, more than five times as many defenders on Okinawa as there was on Iwo Jima. Yeah, 82 days of that. Yeah, brutal. Anyway, Camp Butler, a Marine Corps camp, still on Okinawa because we conquered that shit. dark cloud in 72. When I was at Fort Knox going through the advanced armor course, I was given an assignment to write something about armor in Armor in the Pacific. So I chose Iwo Jima. And I didn't want to do any research because I'd just written a number of things that when I was at IOC in Quantico. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to make a questionnaire. I'll call these guys that were tankers on Iwo Jima, and I'll talk to them, and I'll write something original. And I did. And let me tell you, the interviews were really cool, right? And these guys were tankers on Iwo Jima. And, you know, which island were you on before? So it depended on which division they were with, right? Some were on Guam, some were in Hawaii. And they screwed with every part of the tank. They had welders. They had, you know, guys who did, like, grinding on optical lenses. And, you know, unlike today when you can't do any kind of maintenance on anything, you know, without evacuating it to a higher echelon, you know, you can clean it, right, with hot soapy water, and that's what you get to do. Beyond that, we bring in trained people. But anyway, back then, they screwed with everything. I mean, if you look at tanks on Iwo Jima, and if you look at tanks on later in the Pacific, you'll see nails welded to the top of the turret, to the hatch of on the turrets of the tank, so that if they threw satchel charges on top of the tanks, there'd be space, right, that would dissipate the blast. It wouldn't be right next to the metal. So that's what the nails were for. They welded track around the turret and at different spots on the hull to give it more strength. You'll see wooden frames on the sides of the tanks, and then into the wooden frames, they poured concrete. Yes, they jacked with it. They jacked with it every which way. But anyway, I can't tell you how cool it was to interview these guys. And I asked a couple cool questions. And one of the cool questions always was at the end, what if I omit from this report would make it incomplete? And then the other one was, what about Iwo Jima will you not forget? And I'll just give you a couple of the answers. The one answer I've never forgotten about what will you never forget. And he said, well, look, we were told that we might not go ashore. And if we went ashore, it'd probably be on day three. He said, like 4 hours into the thing, we get told to man our tanks and we're going ashore. And when the bow doors open on the LST, the first thing I saw of Iwo Jima was a Marine holding on to the side of a Jeep with his feet on the tires taking a shit. He said, that was my first image of Iwo Jima. And when I think of it, that's one of the things I always think about. I was like, holy shit. Funny. But what I was going to tell you about Okinawa was something that I was reminded of. So I'm talking to this one guy, and I said, and I asked those questions, and I can't remember what his answer was to the first one, but his answer to the second question, which is a little bit more complex, what if I don't include in this paper would make it incomplete? He said this. He said, Mac, you gotta communicate how ferocious, you know, the Japanese were there. You know, you have to, I mean, that's part of the story. And, I mean, we didn't see him very much. And they were just ferocious. And I said, okay. I said, thank you, sir. And look, I appreciate your time tonight. Because I would just cold call him. I'd introduce myself. And if they had time, they would do it. If they didn't have time, they'd tell them, give me another time to call them back. Nobody said no. Not one person said no. I had answers like this. I don't normally talk about this, but I'll talk to a Marine about it. And they would empty their spleen, and it was before the day of computers, right? I think, and I would, you know, I'd be writing my notes down. I still have them someplace. So this guy says to me, he says, and so I thank him, and I'm getting off the phone, and he says, "Hey Mac, one more thing." And I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, "Remember how tough I told you that they were?" And I said, yes. And he said, well, one other thing. And I said, okay. And he said, we kicked their fucking asses right off that island. And you know what? So even, you know, and that was 20 years ago, you know, 18 years ago. So even into their 70s and 80s, right, there was that, like, chip on your shoulder, fuck you attitude that I love about Marines and the Marine Corps. But I'll never, of all the things that I heard in interviewing, I don't know, I must have interviewed 20 guys. That is the one thing that stood out for me. Hey, remember how tough I told you they were? Yes, sir. We kicked their fucking asses right off that island. Oh, man, I love that. So I've got to finish the weather, and then I've got to do some shithole weather. In Lashkar Gah, Afghanistan, it is evening, clear in 63 in Ramadi, evening, early in the evening, and cloudy and 72. So to shithole weather we go. From Bev in Saskatchewan, good morning and happy Friday from 200 miles north of Minot. Church Bridge is under clear skies with northwest winds at 14. Current temperature is 27, feels like 18. It's going to be 37 in the afternoon and feel like 32. The calendar says spring, but this photo taken on Wednesday by my friend says winter. Too cold yet for the wild rabbit to shed its fur. And this is like a, like, no shit, wild rabbit standing there. And her friend took the picture. See that? You do that stuff. Here's another one. POD. Mac, are you going to post yesterday's lynching Kenny from the first sergeant in Hickory, North Dakota, in Hickory, North Carolina? Yeah, I will. It's not ready yet. Shithole weather. Good morning, Mac. Happy Friday. Today's shithole weather in beautiful Vacaville, California is clear and cold, about 34. Winds 10 to 12 out of the southwest, looking for a high of 63. Looking forward to Chef Kim today. With all the craziness, it will be a nice change. Be well. And then here's a picture of Dave's front yard in Vacaville, California. Looks like where my cousin Tom lives. Yeah, Big Tom. And he's got, like, lawn furniture on the walkway in the front yard. The chairs are 4 feet apart, so they're practicing social distancing, just for the record. Here's another email. Okinawa. Mac, it gets no credit! Same with Saipan and Peleliu, in my opinion. Or barely enough. Yeah, when you go through those battles... Well, I mean, think about this. Oh, and I'm glad I thought of that. I mean, had you ever heard of the Battle of Samar? Right? I hadn't. And now I can't read enough about the Battle of Samar. And it's amazing. I mean, and I'm a pretty decent reader of American military history. And I've never... You know, I'd never heard of the battle. I've heard of the Battle of Lady Gulf, you know, and I've heard of the legend of Bull Halsey. But until you dig a little bit deeper, you don't really find out that Halsey hung the, you know, well, honestly, Halsey's decision there that the Japanese correctly predicted, you know, kills people. And not a few. It sinks two Jeep carriers. It sinks the Roberts. It sinks the hole, it sinks to Johnston, all right? And that's courtesy of Admiral Bull Halsey. But you don't, I mean, we obviously, as a nation, don't advertise that. So, yeah. And the answer to the first sergeant's question, if you didn't catch it already, is, yeah, the Lynch-Kenny thing will go up later on. Tonight, probably. Maybe tomorrow. All right. We're going to take a break, and then we'll check some headlines. Are you sick of coronavirus? You know, I will tell you this. I think that the propensity of leaders early in this thing to go Chicken Little doesn't speak well of them, right? I think Governor Cuomo, a little bit hysterical. And I think that crisis response is an art, and you're seeing the art poorly practiced by many, right? There's a seriousness, I think, that you have to convey to people. But it does not include panic. And I think some of the things Governor Cuomo has said on TV are bullshit. And I think that somebody who has some experience in crisis response ought to grab him and say, hey, look, man, you got to come across as measured. You got to stick to the facts, right? It would help if you bring some experts with you as you lecture from your PowerPoint, right? That would reinforce what you're saying, okay? But don't go Chicken Little on us, okay? Don't go Chicken Little on us. And I mean, and I've seen different, they're mostly doctors saying, yeah, well, that, you know, what he's saying is true is if nobody treats a case. So, but you're watching a lot of people do it for the first time. And they're also, the other thing you got to remember is that they're politicians. And so, right, they've got to be doing it a little bit better than somebody else. And I think the nation suffering from that a little bit. And also on the other end of it, right? You notice that New Orleans did not cancel Mardi Gras. Why not? Business owners would have killed the mayor. You notice that Miami did not cancel spring break and tell people do not come to Miami, right? Hotel owners, business owners would have killed the governor. I don't mean literally, but they would have had his ass, right? And now on the backside of those events, you know, those states scramble, right, to recover from that decision. So, you know, politicians, expect less, right? Expect less. But Governor Cuomo, I mean, every morning he gets on, and he's on right now. He gets on and he speaks to the nation on a lot of networks. And in my opinion, he has not acquitted himself, you know, well. He's acquitted himself okay. And then just the other day, you know, it's like a $2 trillion rescue package for the nation didn't do enough lifting for New York City. And he's talking about, you know, time to put aside partisanships. The son of a bitch went through the Senate 96-0 with both of his senators, who are both Democrats, voting for it. I mean, so you're just like, come on, man. Like, don't be a dick, okay? Yeah, do you know what Nixon's first name was? Dick. You want to be like him? No. All right, more. Hold on. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
This is a good song. All right, we'll take a look at some news headlines. Email, Matt, could you explain the first island chain to me? Yes. If you start in the Pacific and you go up to, if you go to start in Japan, right, and you see Japan, Korea, the Korean Peninsula, right, inside of Japan, right, comes off China. Manchuria comes off China, anyway, the Korean Peninsula. So it's Japan, and then you have the Ryukyu Islands, which Okinawa is a part of, that extend about halfway between Japan and Taiwan. Then you have Taiwan. And then you have the Philippines that used to be our friend. And then you go further to the south and the west and you have Brunei. You have Indonesia. And then you have Malaysia. And then, right, rounding out that kind of curve is up the coast of Vietnam and then to China. That's considered the first island chain, right? So you want to fight the Chinese inside that. You don't want to have to fight to go inside that. Well, I guess this is my question. Like, why would we fight inside of it? Like, what's the advantage to the United States? I mean, we could, you can, you know, it may cost a tanker a day, right? But you can, if you're going west to east or east to west, you can drop below. You can, you know, you don't need to go through the Straits of Malacca. You can go further south, and you can go between Australia and New Guinea, and you could come up, you know, kind of by Guadalcanal. You can do that too. So while that the South China Sea is very important to China, very important to the Philippines, not our friend anymore. Vietnam, we kind of, sort of, are friends. Would they allow us to station troops there and incur China's wrath as a next-door neighbor? Not really sure, right? Indonesia, Brunei, Malaysia. So, I mean, I don't, I'm not a strategic thinker, as everybody knows, but so what would be the point of putting little groups of people zooming around inside of there when you have the weapon capability to stand off? And look, they're not getting out of the Straits, the Malaccan Straits, right? That's easy. Okay, all you got to do is mine the shit out of it and then missile the shit out of it. So they're not going there. And so so that's the first island belt. Okay, and China, I mean, geographically, they're screwed by that. That would be an incredible fight for them to kind of break that and take on Australia, the United States, Taiwan, Japan, and South Korea. That's no small task there, sports fan. So that is the first island chain. We have enough time for me to do the, I'll give you a headline. Mac, what about this Republican congressman? Yeah, I don't know anything about that dude. You know, what's the line out of Band of Brothers? God watches over fools and the Irish. He's a fool. So, yeah, there you have it. Top story in Stars and Stripes today is coronavirus cases soar. All right, soar to at least 69. This is cases now, not fatalities, cases. And then you have people reporting various other cases around the DOD. And then commanders tightening restrictions in response to that. So much of what you see around the country. Top five stories in Early Bird. In the Pacific, a COVID-19 outbreak sidelines deployed aircraft carrier Theodore Roosevelt. All right. I saw this morning that New Orleans is experimenting with a test for an antivirus that can tell you, a blood test that will tell you if you have coronavirus within 15 minutes. All you got to do, prick your skin, you know, take the blood, put it on a slide or something like that, and they test the slide and they tell you if you have antibodies there in your blood, which would mean that you have the virus. A 15-minute test. So probably the most interesting thing I saw in the news this morning. Number two, as COVID-19 cases continue to rise, the military could throttle how much information it releases. That would be prudent. Number three, internal Army memo says measures to halt COVID-19 have proven insufficient. Ruh-roh. Number four, VA Secretary pledges public coronavirus response won't compromise our focus on veterans. God bless those guys. Number five, industry dodges restrictive House measures in Senate bailout bill. The $2 trillion economic stimulus package passed by the Senate late Wednesday includes provisions limiting stock dividends for companies that accept government loans, but avoids the more restrictive language that was included in the House version of the legislation. So you're going to see a series of stories trickle out about who are the winners and the losers, right, in this in these bills. And unavoidable, certain things that couldn't be pulled out. I think the president said it pretty decently. Like, look, I don't want that in there. But, you know, the Democrats control the House. And if you want to get this thing passed, right, there's a certain amount of it that they will shamelessly put in there. So now you're going to hear stories. And I would imagine the same thing happened in the Senate. So we shall see. Overseas operations, U.S. transfers Q West airfield to Iraqi forces, citing progress in the fight against ISIS. Yeah, you know, we've done this before, and it didn't work out very well. So, and we always say that. The Iraqi forces have shown us that they have the resolve and the grit, and then they got their asses rolled by two-bit ISIS motherfuckers. And we all watched Al Anbar that we spent so much time in just go to shit. So anyhow, not that I'm jaded by that, but maybe. Two more rockets hit Baghdad's green zone. So, yeah. And then some stuff that's flying under the weather that you should, just one headline in particular. Oversight on military housing problems are still lax, according to a report. Now, this has been over a year since a series of articles in Reuters that Reuters published, right, you know, got the theatrics, you know, in Congress, you know, going hysterically. All the service chiefs are in there, got called on the carpet, right? The politicians stood up, and at the end of the day, they have not fixed it. The report comes after more than a year of scrutiny into privatized military housing units, prompted by a series of news reports showing families dealing with black mold, rodent infestations, water leaks, and other persistent problems. In December, lawmakers passed a new law mandating expanded rights for military housing tenants, in addition to new oversight rules for military leaders and more funding to monitor problems. The GAO General Accounting Office report acknowledged progress has been made in addressing the problem, but said many of the ways defense officials collect data on housing issues could lead to incomplete or misleading analysis of the current state of housing. Researchers offered 12 recommendations to improve the system. But again, you still don't have the right. Listen to this. You don't have the right to look at the history of the property. Did they come treat it for mold? Did they have to rip out, you know, all the carpet because there was mold in the house, right? You don't have that right. You don't have the right to withhold your rent, and you don't have the right to go, and there wasn't some, right, conflict resolution path laid out. It's bullshit. Absolute bullshit. If those things aren't in there, then it's bullshit. All right. More of Albany Radio coming up next. The chef's going to join us. And we're gonna hang out on the bright side of the road. So whatever you do, don't touch that fucking dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the one and only. Hold on, All Warrior Radio Network.